stories of belief. Now, is it a Mormon? Is it a Christian? Is it a this? Is it that? And I want to know who really believes in me by how many other people they can kill. The Jews are my people, but I want you to get out there and get rid of them. So that means being his people. Chosen for what? Utter and total annihilation? Oh, no. Break out the ark. Of course, there's more than one kind of an ark. Now, to me, the idea that people could build primitive weapons and did primitive things, but you see, they've always tried to figure out what the device was that made this thing work. And they never take into account that maybe it was people thinking and feeling. So I want you to do something really simple. I'm going to teach you to understand new things, even though they're alien. And I want you to do it in a funny way. I want you to sit down and I want you to just have the person, other person, think of something they understand and something they're confused about. They don't even have to tell you what it is. Just go down and find out the difference. Confusion's over here and it's blurrier, you know? And there's a lot of little pictures that come in and out. Understanding is a nice, clear movie. It's over here, right? And it has a beginning and an end and blah, 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 whatever it is. One has sound. Where does it come from? Just go through and find out the dimensions of it. And once you kind of go through it, it's mostly so the person has an idea of the difference between what they understand and what they're confused about. Then have them take the thing they're confused about and piece by piece make it so that it's just like understanding. If it should be over here, have them move it over there. If it needs to be bigger, make it bigger. If it needs to be a movie, make it a movie. If it needs to be in color, make it in color. If it needs to be 3D, if it does. If it has a 3D sound, put 3D sound in until it's just as good as the thing that you understand. And without going out and doing anything else in the world, you will suddenly understand more about what it is you are confused about. Then I want you to take the thing you understand and move it into your confusion. And then move it back to understanding and find out if you learn more. Because my guess is there's tons and tons of stuff rolling around in your head. And you just haven't put it through the machine. You're waiting for it to happen. If you shake your head, then maybe the stuff will start moving. Think deliberately. That means understand. Understanding scares me because you know that goes with the term uh-huh. You're talking to people and they go, Do you know what that means? They just went brain dead. They stopped. When people go, and then talk to them. Otherwise, nothing goes in, because when they go, boom, picture up, gone. Doesn't mean they understand. It means they're not listening anymore. So you're wasting your time, so you need to go, There's all kinds of little things like that that literally are the chemical ways by which we function. Somebody says something to you, don't negotiate. People teach these long negotiating things. The hell with that. When people come up and they say, there's no way in the world we're going to do this project. Go. Makes you want to talk, doesn't it? It's genetically wired every language on the face of the earth. When somebody is talking, when they stop, they raise their eyebrows, it's your turn. You speak. So go first. When they speak and they go, no way, you go. They'll go, unless, of course, we blah, 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 blah. And pretty soon, by the time they're done, then you go, well, okay, sign this. And go, and feel good. And next time, don't make it so tough for me. I've sat down and done this with two sides where I didn't care about the negotiation. I was hired to get them to have a contract where they could get something to work. And I never said a fucking word. I went in and I sat down and the one guy went, blah, 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 the problem, the proposal is da-da-da-da. And I'd go. And they go, unless, of course, we could da-da-da-da. And the other guy said, well, I suggested that 3 fucking weeks ago. And I go. And he goes, but I guess I didn't make that clear. And pretty soon they worked the whole fucking thing out. And then they shook hands, signed a contract, and paid me $22,000. And I thought, cool. What did I do? I got them to not feel so right and to enjoy not being certain long enough to open the doorway and see some other realities. You can show people pictures. You can show people holograms in the lab. Take them down, show them a plate of a hologram where the image is in front of the plate. They'll look at it and see nothing. They'll go, there's nothing there. And I go, we haven't learned to see it yet. I'll put my finger on the plate, say, put your eyes on my finger, move it 9 inches out to where the hologram is, and bam, they can see it. From that day forward, they can never not see it, even if it's a different hologram, because their brain just can't not see it anymore. And then they can't understand how they didn't see it. How could you have missed accessing cues your whole lives? Representational system predicates. Well, it looks blah, 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 but I feel da-da-da-da, and I tell myself this. You know, it's downright important. That doesn't seem to me to be terribly covert, right? And people go, do you really believe there are accessing cues? You know, I think back, and I'm not sure that I've ever seen anything. I can imagine that it might be there, but gosh, you know, I just don't know. Virginia Satir, sweet lady, but I got news for you. She just really was in touch with herself, but when she went and looked in the mirror and said, now, Virginia, what color are your mother's eyes? She said, I watched, but I never saw my eyes move. Well, when you're looking away, you're not looking at the mirror. And she said, well, then how am I supposed to see my eyes move? I said, Virginia, you have this in your unconscious already. You're the only person on the earth that doesn't need to know about this. And you're out there trying to elicit things from yourself? I said, try it with somebody else. Just ask 300 people if they know what the first four notes of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony is. And they'll all go. And then there'll be a certain percentage that look the other way. They all have their watch on this arm. That's a pattern. But yet, scientists, even though they know about it, they proved it isn't there because there might be another way that you could do it. So what? If there's a way to do something, if you can make it so you know more about all the things you've learned, all the things you've read, and it's that easy, you can make yourself smarter, and then you can automate it in your unconscious. Have it do every time you get certain, right? Have it back up and know more about it, and back up and know more about it. If you do that 100,000 times at night while you're sleeping, you'll wake up with all kinds of wild and great ideas about how to make things work. But you can't ask the question, what's wrong with this? You have to go, what would be fabulous? What's going to work? What's going to make us all happy? How can we make life more delightful? You have to ask questions where the answer is going to take you in a good direction. Otherwise, I built this thing into my techniques where suddenly you get really constipated and fixate on it and feel the need to go through analysis. Because if you're going to be a shit, you should be full of shit, and then you should be treated like shit. That's my theory anyway. If you're going to have a theory, it might as well be as nonsensical as what I hear. Because they're always going, well, wait a minute, Dr. Bandler, according to Sigmund Freud, and they go, well, no, we mean Sigmund Freud. And I go, well, that's not what I hear. I hear, and it has nothing to do with him. He did some good work. But, you know, he was a little possessed about this thing. He was so fixated, Jung came and told him he better stop sleeping with his clients or he was going to fucking bash him on the side of the head. And Freud felt that the intimate sexual relationship made the therapeutic encounter even more rewarding. And my question is, for whom specifically? You know, the idea of, you know, saying, well, you know, we're not really working this out verbally, so I tell you what, we'll see if we can get the information to come straight out my penis. I don't think so, okay? It's nowadays, remember, sex can kill you. And everything you do will be on the news, right? Unless we can get back to that Fourth Amendment, I would appreciate it if you wrote your congressman and said, look, we want our Fourth Amendment rights thing. We want Kenneth Starr to go and mind his own fucking business. And remember, Jesse, the body Ventura, ran on a simple thing. He said, I want to legalize prostitution, legalize marijuana, and what people do in the privacy of their own bedroom is certainly their own business. And I think that government should butt out of that sort of thing and maybe do something useful. Build a road or a school, you know? And suddenly, instead of the guy who's supposed to win, this World Federation wrestling guy, who's actually a Navy SEAL, who used to sit around at World Federation Wrestling and read complicated economics books. Every time you see him, you can see him there. I always look and I go, how's he reading that? I had trouble reading that, right? And he's like, his eyes are on, and he's boom, and pages like that. And I thought, he must be pretending. It's all fake. He can't understand economics. Bam, he took a suburb, ran a suburb. He said, you're going to run a suburb. You should be able to run a state, especially like Minnesota, because Minnesotans don't put up with a lot of shit. And my favorite thing when we're in Minnesota is they're always going, yeah, that's some kind of outfit, isn't it? We went down to that government agency, and boy, there they were, and we asked it, and oh, it's some kind of outfit. Those, no. But then they do things like they think that people who are handicapped aren't handicapped. They think they're people who have damage to an arm or a leg. So they make sure there's lots of jobs and lots of wheelchair access and stuff like that, because they go, if it was me, I wouldn't like it. And other places go, well, yes, but it's not cost effective. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we'd like to give women equal rights. But, and I always go, what are they, you can get them to give all that stuff up? And they go, no, no, not that stuff. Things like equal pay for the same work. It doesn't seem reasonable, does it? Women want to be paid the same as men for doing the same job, and we know that it's never going to be the same because she'll get it done. She don't lean on no shovel and stand around and stare at the tractor, because she'll be going, if I lean on the shovel for a long time, it's going to make my arm different than the other arm. And besides, as long as I have this shovel, maybe I could hit that asshole over the head and get him to dig a little faster. You know, I should be the foreman. Why isn't the foreman doing this? And she'll go, hey, you, foreman, come over here. And it's like, because I work for you, so I want you to do this and do that and do this. And he'll go, well, wait a minute, who's the boss here? And she goes, does that really matter? It's one of my favorite things. I was on a gas crew at PG&E years ago when I was in college, when they first let women come out, and everybody went, oh, the women will never be able to do it. They could do so much work so much faster. Because I'll tell you, women can pull out an eyebrow. Think about it, tweezers. It scares the shit out of me to even watch it, you know? I mean, I can fight with a sword another person, and I have no problem being sliced. But pulling out my eyebrows one by one, oh, God, for an hour. And then waxing your belly hairs and going and ripping it off. I think, you know, to me, I have nothing but respect, you know. I mean, I've been in prisons in foreign countries, and I was tortured, but never anything like that, you know. It was always quick and dull pain. Somebody hit you, you know, and you're knocked out. See, the nice thing about me is you can knock me out so easy, you can describe hitting me and I'll go out. Because they can't torture you once you've passed out. You have too many endomorphines. I taught people who were going to be in potentially hostage situations that, right, that the minute, you know, they did anything, that suddenly they'd get a total rush. We gave them all sodium pentothal and had them memorize it so that any time they were in a situation, they could go, and they'd be out cold. Because I'll tell you, there's nothing like being unconscious to solve a problem. Think about it, you know, and you'll have somebody walk up to you and go, were you staring at me? And you go, oh, no, I was just thinking about something. I wasn't looking at you. Because you were staring at me and my girl. I'm going to beat the shit out of you. And you look at him and go, poof, and pass out. And they'll go, what happened? They'll go, I don't know. He's out cold. What did you do to him, you big lug? And the next thing you know, they'll be out there and women will be scratching his eyes out and everything. And when I figure he's in enough trouble, then suddenly I'll wake up and I'll go, what hit me? And they all turn around and look at him and go, you brute, right? And then I'll get up and I'll stumble forward like I'm having problems. And I'll go like this and grab a hold of his genitals, squeeze really hard, and go, oh, no, I'm falling, I'm falling, I'm falling, and I'm falling. And you'll hear this, and I'll go, oh, thanks for holding me up, right? And I'll tell you, it's not kicking a guy in the balls, by the way, that really incapacitates him, by the way. It's headbutting him in the nose. When a guy grabs a hold of you like this, women, don't fight. Go limp and go whack and throw your head back. Right? Because I tell you, it's just really hard to rape somebody when your nose is broken. It's the most painful thing in the world, and all of the muscles in the end of the nose are right next to all the muscles on the genital, on the motor cortex. So you want to rape somebody, you'll have to say, you come back in a month, and I'll show you. Plus, it's hard to run when your nose is broken because it's also connected to other parts of your anatomy. And it's such an easy thing to go limp and go bam and throw your head back like that. And then as long as you're there, I always think it's a good idea to take your heel and drive it into a guy's instep. Instep, by the way, is on the outside of the foot. I'm not the guy that made up the names. But the foot has more bones in it than anything. It's got more bones than the rest of the body. So when you drive a heel into that, it breaks really easy. And then when they go, ah, you get the other one like that. What I like to do is leave that foot down and push them over. So the foot stays flat and the ankle breaks. Then you kick them in the nose and then you go, now, my karate teacher Richard told me you shouldn't do this stuff. Rape is bad for relationships. And if they go, you bitch, kick them in the nose really hard again, 3 or 4 or 5 times. Or get a chair and do it. I like that too. Bang, 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 bang. And if they try to get up, they won't be able to. Their ankles are broken. Their feet are broken. Then you call the police and you go, this man raped me. He's here. You can tell. He's the incapacitated one covered in his own blood. And they go, well, how did that happen? And you go, well, it's that time of month. And you know what they'll say? I understand. I love that. I understand. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Just before I left for my flight, I went down in a little store below my building, and I was there, and I had bought all kinds of juice and things to take with me so that I had food on the plane because I don't like their food. And when I got here, I knew it, if there wasn't something open at night, I'd have what I needed. And I had a big basket full of things, and this woman walked up with a bottle of Midol, holding it with two hands like this. And I looked at her, and I looked at the cashier, and I said, I think, ma'am, maybe you should go in front of me. And she looked at, and the cashier said, I think that would be a good idea. Because you can always tell a married man. He's the one at 3 in the morning in Safeway with the Tampax. Right? And they go, price check on aisle 3 for Tampax supersize. You know how you can tell a guy that's been married for a long time? And you go, I have a coupon for that. I've been married for 25 years. Not bad for a rock and roll musician. First time, I was only married for 2 months, but I married the wrong person. You should never do that. They didn't like me, and you should never marry somebody that doesn't like you. And it just didn't get through my mind right away, but it got there quick enough. So I went out to get some cigarettes, and then 4 or 5 years later, I came back because the courts made me. But I thought once you paid for it, you didn't have to put up with the crap anymore, but it doesn't work that way. They aren't happy unless you feel bad about it. It's not bad. You have to have regret, right? Because if you're not regretful, see, I thought just getting away was the trick. But then you should never pay off your court costs on a tip tray. It's just not nice. You go, and they say, the settlement is this. You write out a check, put it on a tip tray with maybe an added 10%, And I said, that was for the judge. I said, well, after all, they were the only ones doing anything. I don't think anybody should get $4,000 a month alimony. But then they only got it for sure. I said they had to put a time limit on it because I didn't want to have to pay forever. And the judge said, hey, you were planning to be married forever. And I said, yeah, but then since the other person didn't want to be married, it seems like I shouldn't have to pay for it. She said, if you buy something, you should get it. And also, they shouldn't enforce contracts that you didn't make. See, I had a prenuptial agreement, but they took the whole safe and threw it in the ocean, and that doesn't count anymore. You have to actually have a copy of it. I didn't know that. See, I didn't know that people would go to great lengths, but there are attorneys involved, right? And these guys have a mind that can find a way around anything, right? Especially the truth, right? But then the first time I got married on April Fool's Day, too. I should have thought about that. I'm trying to get a message through. But I didn't know. I was young, I'd done things like I thought going to war was going to be fun. Boy, was I wrong. Even going to boot camp wasn't fun. Do you know what time they get up in the morning? Excuse me, I wasn't even in bed yet. Right? And then when I found out restricted meant we couldn't leave the base, I went, excuse me, this is like slavery. And you know what? The clothes are okay, but it's not 1940, And I said, green is not my color. I brought my own clothes. It's okay. I don't mind. And they went, you know what you're bucking for? And I said, no. And they said, we're going to throw your ass in the brig. You'll be cracking rocks at Leavenworth. And I said, sounds like fun. I like rocks. I'm always up in the mountains cracking rocks open looking for things. And this guy said, so you're not afraid of that? And I said, I'm not afraid of violence. I just don't want to go and hurt people I don't know. I want to hurt people I do know. And I want you to know it's nothing against you or your families, but I can't be a conscientious objector, not with 25 counts of assaulting an officer. You should have seen what I did to those police. Beat their feet senseless with my ribs. Smashed them across the hand with the side of my face. It was the 60s, and they were pissed. They went and they tore my car apart. They tore the headline out of it. They couldn't find any drugs. And they didn't bring their own, so I guess they were upset. Right? They said, all this musical equipment and no drugs, it doesn't make any sense. right? And I said, well, you didn't see that there were two cars. I have the musical equipment, and all the other guys were in the car with the smoke pouring out of it. That was behind me. You pulled me over, right? And as they went by, they went, right? But then they have the license plate that says, praise God, Lord Almighty, the truth will be known. And support your local pole lice. See, to me, I always go, please, please, run away, please. I learned that from Joyce. Now, what I want you to do is really simple. All you have to do is go through, find out the difference between confusion and understanding, and then make it so that just tell the person to take very quickly, close their eyes, and only this time when you lift up their hand, tell their finger. Say, hey, finger, are you there? Let me know. You can answer yes by just lifting up a little bit. And when you do, I want you to take this person and have them go into a deep state of relaxation. You do it every night when you sleep. You do it sometimes at a stoplight for no reason. The light changes, you don't. You know what I'm talking about. Sometimes people are yelling your name and you don't hear it. Where are you? Well, I want you to go there. And when you go there, I want you to know what it feels like to relax. Take it and start swirling it and go down. And then I want you to just go inside and take all the stuff you're confused about and go, psh, and put it into understanding arbitrarily and find out if it is not in fact true that you know more than you think you do. And then tonight, I want you to do it 100,000 times more, but just start with one. Don't make it complicated. Take about 10 minutes for each of you. Make it real quick. All you need to know is the difference. You don't need to know anything about the same. Do it thing. Location first. Sound first. Start with the when you're confused, where do the feelings start? When you understand, where do the feelings start? Where do they move? You don't need to know a lot about them. You just need to make sure that when you do it, you make the same kind of feelings, the same kind of pictures, and the same kind of sounds and smells if there are any. But that's usually about cooking or something like that. Or, well, there are other things. Say, for example, do you guys know when a woman is ovulating? Do you know what the word means? Right, because I'll tell you, it's the time to be asking for a date. When women ovulate, it affects them in a way where they're going to be a lot more open to affection than at other times when you say things. And you need to be able to go up and go, I'm not asking for a loan from that loan officer, let me tell you that. Me, when I go through customs, I go, and I found, you know, not only that, you need to be able to find the person who smells happy, right? Otherwise, because I walked up and I said, oh, no, you go ahead in front of me, please. And this nice, straight-looking guy went up, and he put his bags on there, and this woman said, and where have you been? And he said, I was in England for a couple of years. I'm married to an English woman. I said, but I came back because I have a practice here, you know. And she said, a practice? What are you, a musician? And he said, no. And he said, I'm a physician. And she went, a physician, a doctor. She said, did you bring in any contraband drugs? And he said, no. He said, I can get all the drugs I need here. And she said, so you do take drugs? And he said, well, you know, from the pharmacy, over-the-counter drugs, and I write prescriptions. And she said, well, you open this bag. She went through the socks. She went through everything in his wallet. And meanwhile, I'm going out the front door, you know, and I had all kinds of things in my suitcases. I mean, you know, me, I just like, I bring anything. It says there, do not bring plants in. And I go, well, they're not really plants. They're pets. They may look like an unusual vine that only grows in, you know, the jungles of Africa. But, you know, I need this. It's part of my communication seminar because I like to communicate with plants. And I did a whole thing. We hooked them all up to galvanic skin response machines and found out which plants understood things better, whether the plants could talk to each other. Could you have a plant in your office and somebody else's office and literally communicate to your plant and have the plant tell the other person, come in the room? Right. And, of course, that was just a coincidence that they came in the room, and I did that over and over again. But, unfortunately, the person I did this with did not believe it, so they kept telling the plant, look, I don't think he wants me to go in there now. And the plant would tell the other plant, which would tell me, and I'd tell him, just go find out. So he'd go, but I'm going to go find out. And I discovered that the plant was actually doing a much better job in there than the guy that I had working for me. So finally he came in and I had the plant tell him he's fired. And the guy said, watch it, I could kill you, you know. And then the plant told me he's trying to hurt the plant, right? So we went in and said, hey, plants have feelings too, you know. Why do you think vegetarians line them up, chop one up, and make the others watch them die? They're not against hurting animals. They're just poor sports. You know, cabbage can't run. Carrots are stuck in the ground. They see somebody coming, ha, 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 pulling it out, slicing them like that. Oh, you vegetarians, they're all the same, right? What chance does rice stand to get away? I did that in Tony's seminar, and because he gave everybody a phobia of meat and milk, so I gave him a phobia of vegetables and grains. I figured, now they're going to have to make up their own fucking mind, right? Because that's the way I do. I don't think I should dictate to you what you do with your life, but I think you should have a machine that always can open up possibilities and understand more, because you don't want to go, oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah, oh, okay, give me the gun. I'll kill that person, right? How do I know they're that person? Oh, yeah, they're shorter than they live in this country. But when they went to Vietnam, the good guys and the bad guys looked exactly alike, they thought. But according to the people over there, the bad guys were the ones that came into their country. They were tall, white, had big round eyes, right? And camouflaged uniforms inside buildings. You ever seen people? They come to seminars dressed in camouflage. And I tell them, you know, well, it's not going to work. You have to blend in with the carpet. Now, I tell you, 10 minutes apiece. It's now 4:45. So take a 10-minute break, then 10 minutes apiece, and then meet me back here in 40 minutes because we have a lot more to do. Somebody said, well, we're going to end early tonight. And I thought, well, let's end early tomorrow. You know, and that some people have planes to catch and, you know, that stuff. But as long as you're here, don't you think we should, like, do some new things? Yeah. I hate this stuff. I don't want to stop until you're done. Because I just thought, well, it's Saturday night. What if we were to add a thing on your control panel that made it so you could go into profoundly strange and wonderful altered states? How many of you, when you were younger, you don't have to say, took a drug, legally or illegally, nitric oxide or something, and would like to be able to just do that anytime you wanted to, right? Not even for functional reasons, you know, just to get fucking high so that, you know, when your mother-in-law came over, you could hear in your mind a Jimi Hendrix album and get those flashbacks you were promised and get a little nitric oxide, and if somebody goes up and starts to pester you, you can get straight, bow, just like that. You know, for centuries, they've hypnotized people and made them drunk as a skunk, right? And they had them put them in a trance. Pat Collins did it when I was in South Lake Tahoe. Had five people, then they were drunk as skunks, and then told them to go out and drive back and forth in front of the highway patrol. And they pulled them over, gave them breath tests, and they had no alcohol. And it pisses the cops off, and they go, I know you're drunk. And they go, officer, I've had nothing to drink. I went to a hypnotist, and I got drunk hypnotically. And they said, like hell you did, fix that fucking machine. And they'd go, and they'd go, here, blow into this again. And they'd go, oh, here we go again. It's always about blowing, isn't it? And why do they call it blowing? It should be called sucking, shouldn't it? This always bothers me, you know. And when you put that breath thing in there, and you go, like that, you know, you can imagine it's a big bong, you know. And you get even higher, and you go, whoa, and not out over, and they go, must be drugs. They give you a blood test. You're straight as a fucking board, right? And then their superiors go, no, you gave this guy every test in the world. What made you think that they were on drugs? Were their eyes move funny or so? What's the story? And they go, he sounded drunk. He looked drunk, and when I told him to walk the white line, he said he would, but he didn't have a leash, and it probably wouldn't move. That was me. They didn't think that was cute. So there it was. They said, we're going to arrest you. And I said, well, I said, is the room heated? And I said, but if you arrest me, I said, I have to tell you one thing before I get in your car. I'm feeling kind of queasy. Very queasy. And I have a tendency to projectile vomit. And I just had the big, gigantic dinner. And yes, I ate Cajun food. And Thai food. And then I was still hungry, so I went and had a big bowl of tofu. Can you imagine that? And while I'm doing it, I go like this while I talk to them. Because if you go up and down, right, you can walk behind somebody sitting down and just make your voice so that you kneel, go up very slowly like that. Within 4 minutes, they will get so seasick. Because that's what happens on the ocean when you're there. That's the sound going up and down because the boat goes like that. Actually, the earth doesn't go up and down, but tilts back and forth. Oh, the Pope, by the way, said that he was wrong and that the Catholics were wrong. Galileo was right. The earth is not the center of the universe. And gee, perhaps they shouldn't have burned his eyeballs out. See, because they were going to kill him, but he said, I'm wrong. Anything's the center of the universe that you want. So they said, no, we want you to go in your house. They tore his telescopes down, burned his eyeballs out, and made him stay home for the rest of his life. And he said, perhaps we were a bit hasty. Well, I think that maybe we should go and say, hey, look, maybe you're wrong about this masturbation thing. So we're going to try a Tony Robbins thing. I want you to pick up 3 hot coals, hold on to your dick, and think it over. And if you don't feel anything, you shouldn't be in charge of anything. But if you do, then what I want you to do is use your other hand, get more hot coals. You see, it's the burn your dick off experience, right? Because while you're doing it, if you chant just the right thing, you won't feel any pain. What you chant is, what the fuck am I doing this for? Stop it. Take off the dress. Face life. No more bad incantations. No more holy water. No more bad spells. I hate that. Though you walk through the valley of the shadow, you shall fear no evil. It's okay to fear evil anywhere you find it. That's why they're dressed in black. But any friend of Zorro's is a friend of mine. I don't mean to be prejudiced. Because I do that all the time when these priests come in and they go, hey, how's Zorro doing? Because I know it's all involved with Zorro. Because that whole thing with the Acalde and stuff in California, there's a secret there. I know it. Right? And then it turns out all the movies they make, Zorro is gay. Now that works for me. Mask, cape, silk clothes, right? Dancing on rooftops. I live by the Castro in San Francisco, where this goes on all the time, right? And, oh, that's right, people can't get married if they're the same sex. That's really offensive. And, you know, if people who are different sex, like me and my wife, we get married, and we like to do it a lot, right? Because in court, they asked me, and they said, on what day were you married? And I went, well, there were several days, right? I can't remember. In 25 years, we've probably been married maybe 100, 120 times, something like that. I said, but we don't pick it by the day, we pick it by the night, right? And the stars and all of that kind of stuff, you know what I mean. And the guy said, what are you talking about? Because this guy, by the way, that persecutes me in court all the time, he's made it his mission in life to punish me because I'm a Jew, happens to be a minister of one of these neo-Nazi churches, white Aryan things, you know. I mean, you know, his idea of a good time is sitting down with his KKK friends and, you know, thinking up plans about how they're going to do things. They send out psychotic literature, right? But in court, you know, he comes off as the sane one. Yes, well, you know, I'm a minister, you know, and I thought I'd tell you a story from the Bible. And you see, I'm going to tell it from the point of view of God. You see, if I were God, see, like when I had those Jews in Egypt, and I told them, I'm going up to the mountain with Moses, and we're going to have a little talk, make some tablets, came down, and there they were, fucking like minks, right? They had built a golden ram, you know, and they were worshiping to it. By the way, that was not a graven image. That was Moses' brother, and Moses told him to build that. Right? He said, get rid of all the gold, put it in one thing, make it all, mold it up into a big ram, cover it with something so it won't be stolen. Right? And somehow or other, when they translated it, they changed these Bible stories. Right? For example, who would want to be Job? That's not a good job in the Bible. That's where the devil comes up and goes, well, sure, he believes in you, but look, he's got everything. He's got a farm, he's got a health, he's got sons. You give him everything, of course he believes in you. And God said, well, he'd still believe in me, and he wiped out all of his wealth. Job still believed in him. He said, but yeah, he's got his health, he's got his family. So God wiped out his family and covered him with warts, had him with his last son with a knife like this, ready to kill him. And the devil said, well, don't kill him. He said, I guess you were right. He does believe in him, and walked off. So now we have the beginning of the story, the devil made me do it. Only it's Jehovah, which isn't really his name, because if you were to pronounce his real name backwards, it would be, according to the Kabbalah, that which undoes the universe so far. And to me, I believe in evolution. I think it's cool that evolution is not over. And I see changes. People are getting bigger. They live longer. Physically, you're changing. People who live in New Jersey are building a filter in their nose. This is truth. It's actually happening, right? Never underestimate being able to do spontaneous, because if you understand that you can get younger, if you understand and believe that you can be happier and that you can start putting things and making, oh, I don't understand. That's an interesting. I cannot understand more and understand even more than I did. This will be a tool that will serve you for the rest of your life. Because then when you look down and make a slide of a drug that's going to ruin your life, you might say, well, before we take that, why don't we run this movie through 6-7 months? And then if there are things that seem like too big a task that you never do, don't make so many pictures. Just make a slide and try it. Well, I don't know if I want to go out and meet people. I might get involved and rejected. I'd just as soon stay home and feel bad all the time. But at least I won't feel bad in a new way. But you might feel good for a part of that time. Oh, it's just not worth it. I probably wouldn't anyway. No, I'll just stay here. Right. And Bill says to Hillary, no, come on, it'll be okay. But she goes, no, I'm going to stay here with my girlfriend, Tipper. Betty Ford Clinic. Every client I've ever gotten from the Betty Ford Clinic has told me that's where they got their drugs. $40,000 a month that costs before treatment. I thought I was expensive. I got a client who was there, and when he got there, they wouldn't let him in because he was from South Africa, and they felt his country hadn't ended apartheid properly. And he lived in the middle of nowhere in a game reserve with all black people that he'd known for his family for generations. They all lived out there. They didn't even have electricity. And the people in South Africa wouldn't let him marry a black woman. They said, you know, he'll ruin his life. You know, everybody will disown him. The bank wouldn't let him put money in. And the black woman said, I don't want to ruin your life. And she disappeared in the middle of the night. And he couldn't find her. So he felt bad. Started drinking. Got to the point where he was drinking 4 bottles of scotch a day. Yawa. And he was so sick from it, his liver was going, his spots were coming out, and he wanted to go to the Betty Ford Clinic and clean up, because after a certain number of years, he just really needed to. He was next to death. And they said, no, I'm sorry, it's politically incorrect. As long as your country is doing things that other people don't approve of, I'm sorry, we can't help you. He was willing to pay $40,000 a month, but then he called me and told me, there he was. He said he couldn't get in. Have I got any suggestions? And I said, for $40,000 a month? I'll get you a fucking swank hotel room in the city, right? Buy you new clothes, find the missing black woman, and make it so that you can go out and have a drink now and then if you want to. But you'll never do this thing with gin and scotch and being sick again. I can guarantee you that. I can make it so that when you think of something, you want nothing to do with it ever again. Because you can associate things together in such a way that when people think about it, all that goes on in them is, yeah. Because you can't look at things and go, woo, I'm giving that up. Doesn't work. Okay, so anyway, meet me here, because we have something else we have to do. We have to be able to go in and deliberately mix chemicals the right way. Because without that, you can't build proper fetishes, proper compulsions. You can't make it so that you become reading junkies, learning junkies. And whenever people tell you you're not good enough for anything and you can't do something and something's impossible, the big sign that will come up that says, what an asshole. All right, get to it. Do it quickly. How about a little trance music while they do it, too? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Okay, I've just found out that they're going to bring you more coffee out there. So for those of you who want to get wired before you relax, and more sugar, and so you get sugar, caffeine, and what else have you got out there? Thumbtacks to suck on? Why don't you buy a box of apples or something, you know? That's what I used to do, a big box of oranges. Mm-hmm. Close enough. Okay, shh. Don't just go off and enjoy yourselves randomly. Let's see, what else did we promise we were going to do here? Oh, my God. What the hell is this? Oh, it's an interview between Jonathan and the Mind Goddess. Uh-huh. Who's Jonathan, anyway? The Mind Goddess, I know all about that. Pardon? Oh, great. Were those audio tapes? I watched them. No wonder I didn't enjoy them. I watched them, and they just kept going round and round and round. But then I played them on a pencil, because I don't really have a machine with me. I'm getting tired of lugging everything I own with me everywhere I go, because I always think, now, what am I going to need? Well, I need a computer, I need this and I need that. And the next thing I know, I have 45 fucking suitcases. And it's okay if I'm going to Europe for a few months, but I decided to not bring that much with me. And of course, when I landed here in Chicago, the person standing there, this porter, looked at me and he said, God, you've got more luggage than anybody I've ever seen. And I went, So when I cut down, I still have too much. He said, most people just, they're going for the weekend, all they bring is a clean shirt. And I go, well, they must have a really wonderful time then. Because what do? When the day is over, they go in the room and sing beer commercials? Or watch all that lovely stuff on TV? Another episode of Cheers for the 55th time? There's a really good model for relationships. Let's watch people sitting in a bar getting fat and being stupid and thinking it's cute. Well, I don't find it cute. I saw people doing that the whole time I was growing up. Some of them didn't even go in the bar. They just stood on the street corner with a bottle inside a bag and went, fuck, I could have been something in life. Man, I don't stand a chance. And he says, you got any spare change? He says, well, fuck you, buddy, because I could have been somebody. Because in California, Ronald Reagan, the actor, he wasn't a good actor, but he definitely got into the part. I'm sure he thought the whole thing was a movie, too, because he's probably going, we need a little romance. Maybe I could have an affair with that Supreme Court justice. This guy got shot and didn't notice. I mean, you got to be a real man to go, what's that? And they go, Mr. President, we think you were shot. No, I couldn't be shot. He says, I just got this little metal thing here, and so maybe you should hold on to that. We should take you to the hospital. And he goes, why, are you feeling sick? That's my idea of a... That's the kind of guy I want in the White House when wars come by. Right? And he goes, oh, yeah. Or better yet, somebody who knows what they're doing. But I always like the idea of President Bush. There was something about it, you know. And then, of course, the people that ran against him, you know, on the headquarters, you know, outside there, it said, Lick Bush. And, of course, you know, when Bush was elected, before he went into the White House, he'd campaigned so hard that he went to his ranch in Texas and took all of the people that he was going to have as cabinet ministers out quail hunting. I cut this stuff out of the newspapers. I have a big, long journal of this stuff because it's like, and nobody, I mean, these people that write this stuff, they don't think anything about it. My favorite headline, police help rape victim. I don't know. I just like to, I think language is just a cute thing. So, Jonathan and the Goddess, huh? And is there a reason that this is sitting here on my chair with strawberries and grapes? Mm-hmm. And then it says pure NLP. Certainly would, wouldn't it? Yeah. And, you know, John Lavelle, the thing I love about John is just business. Business, I just gets it done, you know. When I work with John, I teach for a while, and then I go and I go, John, what I really need you to do is, and he tells me, this, we have the handouts ready to go, because he just knows where I'm going, he can tell. Because John, unlike most people that I'll teach with, when I co-teach with people, when I teach, they have a tendency to stand in the back and tell people what I'm really doing, and like they know. And otherwise, they have a tendency to like go off, you know, and do things, and then come in and say, well, you know, what would you like to have me do? And I said, I'd like to have you pay attention. That would be good. But I know I'd like you to teach them about sensory acuity, so close your eyes and think about it. John literally parks himself on the corner of the stage and puts on a headphone so nobody can talk to him, turns the sound up, closes his eyes, listens to me talk till he knows exactly everything I'm going to say. He's done it so many times, more than anybody else. And then he'll maybe go up to his room and hang out with his wife, which I just think is a good thing. You know, because I always, for years and years and years, even when I had a big company and I had hundreds of people working for me, anybody who went anywhere and taught a workshop, I had their wife go with them, because I think that's good for relationships. I don't think being away from your wife a lot is going to make you closer. I'm sorry, a lot of people go, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And my theory is absence makes the skin grow hornier. And if you're not talking to the person that you love about things and experiencing things together, then you will grow apart. It just happens. It's, you know, the way it is. If you're both doing different things in different places, you know, and especially when you travel a lot. I travel much of the year. And I know too many people that tried to do it other ways, that there are some things that you really need to be there with the person and do, right? I know everybody's really into this cyber sex. Excuse me, I am so unimpressed, right? There are people that, you know, and I know what's going on, and it cracks me up, because a friend of mine wrote an article because he went into the chat rooms, you know, and he went into this chat room and he said that he was a 17-year-old girl named Wendy, right? And he went through all these long experiences, which he wrote in the article, but suddenly he realized that maybe everybody else in there was a 62-year-old man. Well, now they have cameras, of course, on your thing so that people can watch you do whatever you do on the internet. This doesn't strike me as something I want to get involved in. But then I didn't even put a picture of myself on my own book for 20 years, right? Robert Anton Wilson has written books and he has his picture on him. He's also written some where he uses other names and put Orson Welles' picture on it. And nobody ever goes, well, gee, that really looks a lot like Orson Welles. I mean, it's totally Orson Welles. It's one of the most classic pictures of Orson Welles. But people look on the back and they go, oh, so that's what that guy looks like. And, of course, they have a big thing about the guy, a bibliography, right? But when you go and call to see if there is such a university, not only does he not teach there, there is no such place. And now, I wrote something some time ago, and I said I was a professor at Hisconic University. And the magazine never questioned at all. The person went, Hisconic, you know, I don't know, how do you spell that? And I said, usually in blood. and he went, oh, no, really, how do you spell it? And Hiskatonic University, of course, is supposed to be mythical, but it's a university that's where people who astro travel eventually built a place with a library and everything in it, and people who learned to astral travel can go there and use the library and all that kind of stuff. They behave themselves. And there are so many people that have done it all over the world, but yet there are people that know that it's not true because they can't do it, except when they're having sex. Then they can astral travel, but only across the room and only for the purpose of remembering baseball scores. Excuse me, but I find all of this a little weird. To me, that, you know, I became fascinated when I really stopped and thought about how much people are made out of water. Then I started doing things like carrying a compass, knowing where I was on the Earth, and finding out all the things we knew about magnetic fields and the rotation of the Earth and the speed and all that stuff, and how things change, and started noticing how it affects me and how it affects other people. And if you really tune people in to how their kinesthetics are running, I found out most people, like, when you ask them about feelings, they'll say, well, it starts here, and then it, like, spreads way down here, you know, and then pops out. Right? And then I'll stop and I'll go, does it ever go any lower than that? And they go, well, there's kind of a general thing sometimes that happens. Right? And then when you look at their posture, you can literally see it's like there's two of them. The waist and the upper body don't look like they came with the same human, especially when they walk. Right? And when they sit, they obviously don't know where gravity is. They sit like this. Right? If you tilt something at an angle, the shearing force of gravity will create stress, and it will get warped after a time. Even a board leaning against a building, a 2x4, gets warped after a while. That's because gravity pushes down. Now, since we know it's there, since you can depend upon it, why not work with it? See, to me, always I'm looking for what's the zero gravity, so you find the point of least resistance for everything. We want to be able to get from point A to point B as quickly as possible. One route which seems to work is the following. Now, let me ask you this. I know that many of you have been to the dentist and taken nitric oxide. Very cool drug as far as I'm concerned. I was on a racing team for a while, and you have tanks of it everywhere. So I brought my diving thing down, and I used to put it on the tank, right? And when I had to do really boring things that they make you do, you know, I had to go through this really laborious deposition. Went on for 2 fucking weeks, right? I had to sit there and have guy ask questions that, you know, I didn't know the answers to, because I don't keep track of a lot of things. He would go, exactly what time was it 3 months ago, and what day was it that you decided that you were going to do a workshop in Germany 3 years later? And I'd go, I don't remember. And they'd go, well, was it before the 17th? And I'd go, I don't know. And I'd go, see, if I thought about that stuff and remembered it, then I'd be able to tell you. But you care because it works for your case. But I don't care, and it's not my job. I don't even know where I'm going next. And he goes, your next workshop? I said, no, when I walk out of this room. And I said, but I'll tell you one thing. I have terrible trouble breathing in this polluted city down here. So my doctor made me bring these oxygen tanks. Now, it may be a little noisy. And then I took out the regulator, turned on the tanks, and went... And then he said, now, was it after the 19th? And I went, and I said, I don't know, and I still don't know. Because I was starting to feel angry that this guy was making me sit there. And then he started getting uptight, and he goes, you know, this isn't any laughing matter. And of course, that really made me laugh. And then I turned the tank all the way open. Because, you know, when you go to the dentist, they turn it on. When they walk out of the room, give that sucker a little twist till your toes tingle. That's just at the edge of you're going to drop into a coma. And then you start to feel like you're floating and stuff. And then you notice when you look over and see yourself down in the chair, you say things like, don't go in the light. Poof, and then you hit your head on it. And you discover it wasn't you floating down there. It was the light coming down on you because you were holding on to it thinking it was a handle. And then you start getting fascinated with things like that sink they have with the water going around and the thing they put in your mouth that goes gurgle, gurgle, gurgle. I love that thing. I like to put it other places. And then they have that gun that squirts a little stream of water they shoot in your mouth. Neat, you know. What you do is over-the-shoulder shots when nurses go by. And they do this, and they go, doctor, I think there's the rain is leaking in. And they go, it can't. We're on the first floor. There's 3 more stories in the building. And they go, well, I think I got water on me. And, of course, my dentist I've known for years, he looks at me and he goes, Richard, knock it off, right? And I'm going through the drawers like this, you know, because to me, I found it just made intolerable things. The reason they give it to you before you get a root canal is it doesn't really get rid of the pain, but it makes it so you really don't give a fuck. And there are many things in life. See, I decided higher education should be dealt with this way, right? They made me, and there were classes in college that had mandatory attendance. This tells you the teacher has to be so boring, right? So I used to go in and I'd bring my diving stuff with me, flippers, mask, everything, you know. Go in, sit down at my desk, right, with this stuff, and the teacher would come by and he goes, what is that? And I go, well, I'm taking diving in PE. And he goes, this college doesn't have any PE. And I went, oh, so I didn't know that, because I've never been over to where the sports stuff is. It turns out they have fencing and tennis, but they didn't. I said, well, it's a new thing. We're just starting it. And he went, oh, okay. And I said, would it be all right while you're giving your lecture? I said, I have trouble breathing through the regulator. Is it right if I practice? And the next thing you know, I'm like passing it to the person next to me. And I had a buddy breather on there with a 10-foot hose. And pretty soon, you know, everybody in that corner back there is laughing their ass off, because this guy, he taught a class called Interpretation of Personal Documents. It was required in order to graduate because he was head of the department. Didn't even have anything to do. I didn't even graduate in anything that had to do with documents. Information science, we had little photons going along, little electrical things, right? In those days, I mean, machines didn't even have TV screens. They had intelligence terminals. We could kill a tree with one message, right? Came out in big fucking rolls of paper. When you wanted to know what was going on, you'd roll it down a hallway, and four or five of us would get in there, and we'd go, what's on line 29,000,006? Right? And the guy would go, well, it's 00FQ, F3AD66. Six. And I'd go, that's it. That's where we're headed. Now, but the amount of paper we went through was phenomenal. And you know what? We wouldn't have had to kill trees if we could have used hemp paper. Much better paper, too. But it's illegal. Can't have marijuana growing all over the country. Can't be using recyclable sources. Can't be doing the right thing, because then we'd have to admit things. President Clinton says he smoked pot, but he didn't inhale. Well, that explains why he doesn't like it. Right. What he should do is, number one, get some much better pot, because, you know, some pot's really fucked, and some of it's pretty good. Some of it smells good, and some of it smells bad. Just like everything else in the universe. There are some potatoes I don't like. There are some pickles I can't stand. I mean, sweet potatoes, lots of people like them. They give me the willies when I see them, the smell of them. And tofu, well, I enjoy tofu, but I don't eat it. I like to carry it with me, punch a small hole in the thing like that. And then, you know, if there's somebody who is like suggesting that we engage in sexual things and I don't think it's appropriate, I go, well, gee, I'd like to, I said, but I'm having a little trouble. I guess the word would be, and I reach in my pocket, squeeze that tofu, and I go, there's this pus thing, you know? That, a little red food coloring, a couple of drops in the tofu gives it that mushy thing, too. And if you put some mayonnaise on it, boy, I'll tell you, you can get somebody who just, I'm going to go, well, you know, it doesn't always leak like this, you know? I said, you know, I can usually, if I get it all out, you know, it doesn't, like, come back for at least half an hour, you know? But sometimes I think that this isn't natural. And people will look at this stuff and I go, oh, there it goes again. And you unzip your pants and on the front side of your underwear, so it doesn't get on you, you put a little tofu package, tape it on there, and you go like that. And it goes bleh, on the floor, a big, that glop sound, bleh, like that. And you can watch people like doing this and you go, but if you don't mind, what were you thinking about, oral sex? And you can watch them go, turn green, and you go, hold that thought. That's right. Well, I know you may find this hard to swallow, but boy, I can get rid of them really fast, you know. And then, of course, I found out with proper use of certain kinds of sushi, you could create some of the best blemishes that you'd ever seen. Open sores, right? What you do is you take that octopus stuff and you cut it up, right? And then you take, you know, a little of that Cheese Whiz and glue it on like this, and put a little tofu underneath it, so when you press it, it leaks down, right? And then you go, well, you know, I'm kind of embarrassed, you know, and then you open up and you have a whole bunch of this stuff there, and you go, I got this rash, I'm not really sure what it is, but do you think this is good? And I'll go like this, and he goes like that, and this stuff running down and stuff. And of course, I like it to have the right odor too, you know. And there's some things when I smell it, I know it's not supposed to go into your body, right? There's just no way. One of those things they sell in a health food store, it's called kefir, right? Well, especially if you set it out for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, it really gets this great texture. And as a sculptor, I do a lot of artwork and sculpture. I like my sculptures to have surprises. For example, I did the head of somebody, and it's a bust, you know, just this part of the upper head, and it's on a post and stuff. But when people walk up, when they touch it, it's actually very thin skin. Wherever they touch it, suddenly this stuff leaks out of the nose. It has actually is a pump, and just like the elevator button when you touch it, right? Anywhere you touch it, it just activates this little pump, and it begins to spew this stuff out of the nose. And well, I find stuff like that fun, because what I do is I have a little sound thing in there that goes like that, and it always turns so that it's in the direction of the person who touched it. So if you touch it on the back of the head spins around and goes poof, and it hits you like that. And what's amazing is that I'm very careful that what I do is I have then right next to it some art thing that I did. I made paper mache thing of handy wipes, right? But when you go to grab it, it's not handy wipes. It's a representation of what handy wipes would be. So when you grab it, you can't get one out. It looks real. So real. But people go and they just want it to be real, because otherwise they have to touch this, right? And you know, and they, you know, and then the smell starts coming up, and people say, well, isn't that unfair? And I go, well, not really, because when I walk out of the room, I go, just be careful, don't touch anything. And people walk up and they like look like this, and of course we're up there looking at them on videotape going 5, 4, 3, prepare for launch, right? And somebody goes, I'm not ready yet. And we go, well, it's never a case. It's now or snever, right? And then across the room, I have a photograph, which I made. And it's actually not a photograph. It's actually a launching pad. And it's a very beautiful picture of this very elegant Victorian woman outside dressed in a thin veil. And she's looking like this. But what happens is if you turn and look at it, if you approach it, when you get within a certain thing and you break the barrier for the sound motion detector, what happens is the face literally leans off of the picture, because it's actually a sculpture, but it's in the picture, and it leans out of the picture, and the nose gets bigger, and suddenly you see stuff going out like this, and suddenly it goes like that, and it, I don't care if you're in a dead run, it's going to get you. But the neat thing is it doesn't stop, it just keeps coming, and it's all connected together, one gigantic humongous 7.5-foot booger, green, texture perfect. I experimented for a long time to get it so that not only would it hit, but you can't get it off unless you put a negative ion gun. Then it just drops right off. But the more you touch it, right, the more it locks on, and then it starts rolling around. And then it lifts up, and it has a head with eyes and looks at you. Little robotics in there, you know. I believe in these things. I think that people every once in a while need a little shaken up. Makes it so when they go to the supermarket and they go, oh, yeah, we will act like we're Chinese. We'll have some tofu and some fried vegetables. And then they look around and the vegetables look back. And suddenly they look at the tofu and the memory comes back and they hear the theme from Jaws. Anyway, you have that cash register thing? Just an idea. I want to put a sound in your head before you go to bed, because I want you to begin to look at your own control panel and say, look, if I sit there and I think of something that gave me the biggest adrenaline rush, and as I remember it, push up a slide, and as I dissipate it, pull it down. As I think about it and cycle it and pull the slide up, and then as I do the things that I know get rid of a feeling, pull it down, pretty soon you can just push it up and it's there. Then pretty soon you can think it up and it's there. But you need to begin to explore all the different kinds of things that you can do. You can have adrenaline rushes. Then there are some times where you had feelings that were pleasant. Now, for those of you who went through nitric oxide, here's the trick. The only time you felt the way you felt from taking nitric oxide or Demerol or pot or LSD or coffee or self-righteousness, they're all the same, is something that produced a distinctive feeling inside of you.
Now, if you take one that falls in the category of getting high, because I'll tell you, if you alter your state, all the rest of it is easy. See, to me, I always used to, I didn't bother because I took enough LSD that all I had to do is think about it, you know, and I'd hear Jimi Hendrix, you know, and I saved a lot of money. That's where you hit the sound. There we go, right on there. I got rhythm. Now, I like the sound of the Chrome Gods singing. To me, when I was young, I worked in a place, and when the Chrome Gods sang, we all ate. If the Chrome Gods didn't sing, you didn't eat. Now, the thing is when you start to do things right, unlike school, I don't want you to make a red check when you do things wrong. The more you get closer to what works, the more I want you to feel good. And if you miss totally, I want you to just laugh it off. Go back and get closer. The closer you get, the better you feel. So it's only a question of how good you feel, not that you should feel bad. If you totally do it wrong, you still get a little bit of good feeling for knowing you were headed in the right direction. You just got in the car and you got in the wrong side and there was no steering wheel. I rented a car and when I was in Ireland, the guy said, "Are you sure you can drive on the other side of the road?" I said, "No problem," and got in the passenger seat. This did not reassure him. He went, "It'd be better if you got on the other side." I said, "Don't worry about it. I know what I'm doing." Went around and got in, went to reach for the key and went, "Oh yeah, the key's now going to be over here. And I suppose that's a stick shift? Yeah. I know how to drive a clutch into the floor." So I stepped on the gas pedal, shifted, and then pressed the clutch in to try and stop. No, actually, it's very easy. Any of you have to go to England or Ireland or somewhere where you have to drive on the other side of the road, it's always the same. All you have to do is keep the passenger by the curb. And it doesn't matter, because when you go in the other thing, they put the steering wheel on the other side. So the steering wheel is always by the center line. However, there's not always a center line. But whether there's a passenger or not, you can always think if there was one, they should be where the curb is. And you'll never have a problem. When you turn anything, just keep the passenger by the curb. And you can drive anywhere. And you don't have to change any of your thinking. Change the way you think, everything gets easier. Now, they used to say, "Well, I'm going to take this drill. I'm going to drill inside your teeth." And pretty soon it got to the point where I learned I could do this. Take your hand, reach inside your mouth and go. You just pull your cheek out and wiggle it up and down. Straight out and up and down. Try it. And then, after you do this, in a couple of minutes, because the only time this has ever happened was what we refer to as pre-numpung, you'll begin to feel it inside. The sensations will literally start in your cheek because your body learned it. Now, the only time that you felt a mask over your face and heard that sound, now, when you inhaled, where on your body, no matter what drug it was that you took or anything, LSD was the one you used to have to wait 45 minutes, unless you were like me, but it was DSMO, and you were there now. By the way, it's a good way to negotiate with people. Some people, I think, need to, like, give them 20 or 30 hits of acid on their seat with DSMO and let them talk it over with God, and you don't have to be there. But then that would be mean. I would never do that. Maybe. That's why when they come into negotiations, they always look at their seat. They go, "Did he do anything?" And I never do anything, but sometimes I lie. So I told a whole group of psychiatrists that I thought if they gave people these psychotropic drugs, halothane, thorazine, that they should understand them. So I put a lot of halothane in the coffee thing and in the tea water. And they looked back and there were empty boxes all down on the floor under the table. And they freaked. Suddenly they all got dizzy and were getting shuffles and walking around with symptoms. I didn't put anything in the coffee. I just found the empty boxes outside in the garbage can, and I thought, Oh, placebos work? Even on psychiatrists. And even when I told them I didn't do it, they wouldn't believe me. They were going, and I liked this, they said, "Oh, I'm feeling dizzy," and they said, "Can somebody get me coffee?" I went, "I will." And you know, since they're psychiatrists, they let me get it, and I got it from the same coffee maker, and they thought nothing of it, and they go, "Oh, yeah, that'll straighten me out." And they go, "This is pretty good coffee." And I said, "Yeah, I made it this morning." And they went, "You didn't get the coffee from the urn." And I went, "Well, sure I did." And they went, "But isn't that?" And I said, "I was lying. I made it up." And they went, "Oh, God. Oh, I feel like I'm going to throw up." And I said, "Me too." I said, "If this stuff's so bad, why do you give it to the patients? You fog up their minds. How are they going to get clear? The people who take drugs should be the people who can appreciate them. And they should be the people who want them. And there's lots of drugs, by the way. Anger is a very powerful one. You know how much it takes in terms of hormones, enzymes, to work up that kind of thing, like rage? It's a complicated, sophisticated process. And it depletes tremendous amount of energy. You have to move muscles around. You have to do all that stuff. Get your blood pressure up and get your eyes to stick out and stuff. You know, because I always like it when people go into a full tilt rage. I go, ooh, I go, that's neat. I go, can you do that on one foot? And they go, what the hell are you talking about? And I go, one foot, hop on one foot, up and down. Hear something inside your head playing the theme from The Godfather. You know, then try and be mad, because it's very hard to hum the theme from The Godfather and remain angry. Just too complicated the task. You know, it's like walking, chewing gum, and saying the alphabet backwards and being depressed. Incompatible tasks, too complicated, because the limits of human memory are really 1 ± 1. Not 7 ± 2 and all that shit. Most people, if you add one thing, they forget what they were doing. See? But I like to bring things back. So what I want you to do is, as soon as you have that sensation, try it. Do it with me. Go. Remember being in the smell of the dentist's office, the smell of the gas, the feeling of it going in, right? And where's the first part, first location? All you have to do is remember the first location that you felt anything from it. Was it your nostrils? Was it your forehead? Was it your cheeks? Whatever it was, it doesn't matter where it is. Just remember it. Then go back to the beginning. Take a deep breath. Take that feeling, and then remember, where's the next location? Did you feel something on the surface of your skin? Maybe the hair on your arms? Maybe something in your chest? Maybe your fingertips? Then go back to the beginning and go and do the second location. Then the third location. Then the fourth location. It might be spreading around your body. You might begin to have the sensation where things feel kind of silly. You feel a little tickling on your back. Who knows? Then you go back to the beginning and go, and you recycle through it. You do the first 5 locations for any drug, pain control medicine, doesn't matter what it is. And especially if you start out in a good state. Now, I'll tell you, this isn't that useful if you have like 20 or 30 teeth ripped out. I know, I tried it. I couldn't concentrate. I was too busy screaming at the top of my lungs, right? Then it's much better in that state, I think, you know, for somebody to like hit you really hard with a hammer on the top of the head and knock your ass out, right? I think that, you know, the kind of drug you want at that point in time is suffocation. I mean, they told me this isn't really going to hurt that much, that I'd be better off, and I knew I would health-wise, but they said once they're ripped out, how much pain could you feel? And I found out. And the answer was a hell of a lot. But the minute I got it under control, I would go back and remember when I took Demerol. Well, I didn't take it. They gave it to me. I was laying in the emergency ward, and they said, well, we want to operate. And I said, I don't think it's a good idea. And they said, well, we're going to have to. And they said, no, we're going to give you this. Count backwards to from 100 to 1. And I got all the way down to minus 99. And they said, this isn't working on him. And I said, well, yeah, I do this stuff all the time. Sodium pentothal, that to me is like a date drug, you know? I was like, you know, well, I had to do something to tell the truth. I wasn't used to it. And well, they don't really want the truth, you know. They go, why didn't you clean your room? Because I didn't want to. That's why. I don't like to do that. That answer is never acceptable. They go, no, no, tell me the truth. You knew you were supposed to do it, so why didn't you do it? So finally I said, the gremlins stopped me. They came out of the woodwork and held me down and forced me to read dirty magazines. It was horrible. They made me go in your room and steal money from your purse. Anyway, they did, and they'd run in and they'd look in their purse, right? And they'd go in their purse and there'd be a lot more money than there used to be. See, Richard discovered very young the magic machine, the Xerox machine. Lord God of Xerox provided for Richard for many years. See, I just took dollar bills and I bleached them out and I made them into $50 bills. Well, I didn't know it was illegal. I thought that's why they had Xerox machines. I had no idea, right? And I would go down to the government buildings, because banks had equipment to detect this stuff. But I would go into government offices and say, can I pay my fine with this? And they go, what fine is that? And I go, just find one. It's $10. Right? And they go, what? And I knew people who had to have fines. And I just make their names. And they say, well, you're damn right. You do. You have $25 in fines. And I go, well, here, I want to pay off 10 of it. And I give them a 50. They give me the change. I like to go to the Treasury Department, too. They never look. Right? It's a funny thing, you know. They go, cash? We haven't seen that in a while. And I go, yeah, probably because all of it that comes in here goes home. Well, they go, you can't just leave it lying around the office. We'll get that dirty stuff up here. You know how dirty money is. They actually burn big piles of it and then sell the burnt ashes. So they're selling you ashes of what used to be money. Sure. I believe that, right? All the guys are in charge. They go, we always burn all the money and then put the ashes in bags. Hey, well, you're guarded by guards. We can't steal it because those guards, they would never help, you know. It's like billions of dollars. And then, of course, you find out that these guys, they go, well, come on over to my house. And you go, and they live in a fucking mansion. They're a security guard. And you go, gee, where did you get this big house with the tennis courts and the five cars and the three boats? And they go, oh, my uncle left it to me. He was a gardener. He made really good money. And to me, you know, I don't think it's waste. I mean, to me, I think they're all out there stealing. I like to earn mine. That's the way I do it. I'm old-fashioned. You know, I don't like the idea that, you know, you get your money by creating poverty in others. See, at one time, there was no money, none whatsoever. Keep breathing. Send the feeling through. And if the feeling was a result of some pill you took, you knew where you felt it first, where you felt it second, third, fourth. Cycle through it. But keep doing it. I'm just trying to entertain you while you run it through enough. How many of you really like to drink but better not? Right? Well, you know what it felt like when you first start getting the buzz on. When you took that first shot, right? And feeling of it going down in your chest. And you know where the next location is. See, I always thought it was cool. Hypnotists said, that's right. And now that you're in a slightly hypnotic state, you've been drunk many times. And pretty soon, you're going to find that you're getting more and more drunk. Because since you know how to be drunk, you might as well do it without alcohol. That way, you can get sober and go home and get drunk when you're there. Just by going in and looking at the switch that says, drunk as a motherfucker. And you go and you barely touch that switch and it slams shut, right? And then when you try to pull it back out, it's stuck in there, right? And suddenly it spins around like this. And as the more it spins, the more you forget there was a switch. And suddenly a little LED thing pops up and says, you now have the same equivalence of five more shots. Welcome to a really great buzz. And with this buzz, you have no hangover in the morning, no side effects, doesn't affect your liver, but pisses everybody off. Because you're going to be having a wonderful time, and then you go, doot, and you're done. Hey, why not? If it's been done for years, you can do it. Anybody who does stuff, you can do too. It's just a question of remembering it. Keep breathing, that's right. I'll know when you guys are doing this. If you don't remember to kind of cycle through the things that make you feel good, what do you guys do? Masturbate one stroke a day? All right, I'll be back at four tomorrow. But you know, it's easier if I don't use that damn sandpaper. And what I want to know is, well, you know, somebody once asked me, and they did it with totally serious. They said, I heard about this AIDS thing. It was about 10 years ago, and they said, And I need to wear a condom for protection. And I went down and they showed me, and they put this condom on a banana and had me put one on a banana. But I'm really confused. I don't understand what you actually do with the banana that makes it so you don't get AIDS. Well, I thought this was really funny because my son came home and said, Dad, can I have a banana? And I handed it to him and he pulled a condom out of his pocket. And I said, what are you doing? He said, my homework. And I couldn't stop thinking about this guy. And I said, oh, so this is sex education, or is it something about fruit? And he said, no, you know it's sex education. He said, you know, sometimes I think the woman that teaches this course, well, I don't think she really knows much about sex, you know, because I was asking some pretty detailed questions, you know, kind of like you do with the priests when you go to confession. Oh, you guys don't do that? That's fun. I love that. I like to go in there and close the door and go, please, Father, forgive me. Man, did I sin? Ooh, yes, I sinned. And they said, Tell me about it, your son. When, as long as it's been since your last confession. And I said, well, my last confession was about 375 years ago. But I'm not really the same person I was then. And he goes, now, don't joke. He said, what exactly did you do? And I said, well, I was sitting in this room, and it was a public place in a restaurant, and this woman walked in, and I looked at her, and I noticed that when she breathed, her nipple touched the edge of the dress. So I began to breathe at the same rate, and I smiled at her, and she smiled, and I noticed her lower lip began to fill with blood and kind of turned out. It's almost as if I could see her breath. And suddenly, she licked her upper lip just ever so slightly, and I noticed that her nipple extended even further, and I could see little beads of sweat on her breathing. And it made me feel something really, well, I started to tremble all over your body. Usually within 20 minutes, I have them clawing the side of the booth, saying, shut up. Shut the fuck up. And then when they start to go out the other side, I like to drop out real quick and go around the back. So when they open it, there's no one there. Then I put on my cloak of invisibility and tiptoe out. And they look around and they'll say to the other guy, did you see some kind of a pervert go into the confession booth? And they'll say, well, all I saw was you go in there, Father. That's when I start laughing, right? And it's not good to laugh in the church. There are people there praying. I try to be nice, but there's all that stuff in there. I just can't help it, you know. You know that, did you know that Jesus had to be married, by the way? Rabbis must be married, consummated marriage, or they can't teach anybody anything. So if Jesus was a teacher and he was a rabbi, that's so the story goes, when he became a teacher, he also had to have a wife, and he has to consummate his marriage. And people watch to make sure. It's not like that thing. They don't just yell L'chaim and crack a glass. They crack a lot more than that. Now, how come they don't tell you this? They're trying to keep secrets from you. So really, one of you in here may be Jesus' great, 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 great grandchild. Think about it. And this virgin stuff, there aren't any Jewish married women who are virgins, excuse me. It's not a Hebrew thing. Because it ain't a marriage until it's consummated. But there are many women who have been virgins many times. Even in my high school, I took a woman out twice, and she was a virgin both times. And I didn't even sleep with her, but I know lots of other people that did those nights in the back of my car. And it just wasn't my thing. I didn't have a condom and a banana to protect myself. Although I find they are very effective if you put the condom on the banana and put the peel back up and carry it with you. And when people start to give you shit, you take the banana and you peel it off and you go, I have protection. I got a banana and I know how to use it. Now, close your eyes and begin to cycle very quickly through the four locations. Because you only put your consciousness on these locations when you went into the drug state. Let yourself drift back into it. Focus on nothing else other than amplifying each time. Make the sensations stronger. Feel the breathing, feel the thing, feel the sensations. And then once you go and you begin to move it faster and faster around, let it spread out into the rest of the sensations. You remember that special tingling you got somewhere? Remember shivers you got? You remember maybe goosebumps? You remember funny tastes in your mouth, maybe sensations of saliva. All of those things can come back to you now, and the more you remember, the more you're going to begin to feel this way, and the more you'll begin to giggle. Because when you put a giggle attached to everything, life can't get you down. You can't have low self-esteem. Nobody can give you shit, because when they do, you begin to go, and you say, well, the guy's going to give me gas. I'm going to get the kind I want. Take a deep breath and begin to laugh deeply and realize as you do, endomorphemes are yours. Spread throughout your system. You're now getting what the heroin addict gets for free. And it's not synthetic, it's what heroin imitates. So you get free fucking drugs for life. And you can pass a drug test anytime. Not to mention the fact you now know enough to carry that banana with you. People give you a dirty look, whip out the banana, peel back the skin, let the condom stand upright, and say, all right, hold it right there. Especially in England, if they're a government official, they get very nervous because apparently they've seen this before. Me, I brought it to the school board, one in a holster on either side of me, pulled out my bananas, pointed them at the school, and said, I have some questions about sex education. My son does not know what to do with these bananas, so I brought him down here to demonstrate. Would you all turn around and bend over? Trust me, the teacher told us this is safe. Which I guess means she's done it before. Now, I'm all for children knowing about things, but I don't really think that you put the condom on the banana. In fact, it's not necessary to bring fruit with you every time you have sexual intercourse. Although it's not a bad idea. Now, I know. There's a guy over here. I looked over here. One of you men, I noticed when I said you just had to give up drinking, but you really liked it. Who was that? Because I saw your body respond. Well, I saw your hand, but there was one over here. That's right. That's right. Don't be ashamed. It's okay. I had to give up drinking, believe me. Because, you know, I'd take one shot of tequila, then I'd have a mug. And I could take a mug of tequila and go, poof, like this. Right? But when I looked back, the world looked totally different. Everybody that was there was someone to punch. And I went out looking for ways to offend the largest number of people I could. I'd go down to biker bars and kick that first bike over and watch them go bang, 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 bang. And go inside and go, any of you faggots in here drive a bicycle?